2. So if you've got your Bible, phone, tablet, whatever you've got, open up to James chapter 2. And we're reading tonight verses 14 through to verse 26. So James chapter 2, beginning at verse 14. And this is what we read there. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that there is one God. You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar? Do you see that faith was working together with works, and by works faith was made perfect? And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. So as I said, that's where we're looking tonight. James chapter 2 verses 14 to 26. And tonight's sermon we've titled Faith Works. Now, as we look at this part of James, this is probably one of the most practical, but also one of the most difficult books of the Bible to fully get our heads around. So often it seems like faith and works are very different, but James is telling us here that they're very closely interlinked. And as we read through what we've read in James, once more, those words are words that should challenge us right down to our very core. Last week, we looked at the topic of avoiding favoritism. We see that the favoritism last week is destructive, and we see that it's just plain wrong to play favorites with the people we have in our lives. And one of the things that stood out to us when we looked at favoritism, it was very easy to say that we don't fall into this trap of treating one person better than another person, particularly based on how they looked, which was the example that James gave us. But even though we say that, when the rubber meets the road, we often struggle to actually put that into practice and to treat people equally. Tonight is something a little bit similar. But rather than just looking at this one topic of favoritism, and we saw last week again how serious favoritism is. And without downplaying that, that was one topic. That was just one thing. Tonight's topic, tonight's idea that James is writing to us about, of having a faith that works. This is a topic which impacts every single area of our lives. Now, maybe that seems broader and less specific to us, but the way that James writes it, he writes it in a way which, while it is general, we need to put every part of our lives under the microscope when we look at this tonight. Now, that might not sound like a comfortable night that we have up ahead. It might not sound particularly comfortable. We don't like being challenged. But sometimes we do need to be challenged to be able to grow. And the end result is hopefully going to be something that is spiritually profitable for us. James starts off tonight in chapter 2, verse 14, with the question, what does it profit, my brethren? If someone says he has faith but does not have works, can faith save him? And what does it profit? Now, obviously, we're not talking about a dollars and cents sort of profit coming out here. What James is talking about is a long-term, eternal, spiritual profit that we can have when God works in us to put these things into effect. All of us can profit from what we read in James tonight. Now, one of the things that we can't forget when we read any book of the Bible is who the original audience of each book was. For James, it was Jews, particularly Jews who were believing in Jesus, Christian Jews who had suffered for believing in Jesus. They were spread out across the known world at that point in time. They were poor. They were destitute. They probably didn't have much more clothing than what they were wearing at the time James wrote this to them. They knew hardship. They knew others who were facing hardship as well. But still, James is right when he says that there is profit in faith. As we see how that works, what does that look like? A big thing that keeps coming through what we read tonight is the idea that faith without works is dead. The two can't be separated. I'm not sure about you, but I love burritos. Anna's smiling up the back, because she knows what I'm going to say next without really talking about it. Burritos are one of the few foods that I can cook safely without needing the ambulance on speed dial. It's one of my favourite foods as well. I love having burritos. There are no lives risked when I cook them. It's absolutely amazing. But when I go to eat a burrito, I'm sorry for those who are lactose intolerant, but if that burrito doesn't have sour cream, in my mind, that's not a burrito. That's an imposter, that is something else. Now, James is talking about something far more serious. I'm sorry, Michelle. James is talking about something far more serious here than a burrito without sour cream. But it's a similar sort of thing, principle, that some things cannot be separated from another. Some things need to go together. Like my burritos and my sour cream, faith and works go together. James is saying to us, if we have faith, if we say that we have faith, but we don't have any works to back that up, we're kidding ourselves. We're not getting it. We're wasting our time. It's just wasted, empty platitudes being given. So when James talks in this part about faith without works being dead, it's useless. He goes on to provide some really practical examples of what this looks like. He gives us a situation which the guys he was writing to, remember, they were poor, they were destitute, they were hungry, they didn't have much. The guys he was writing to had probably been on the receiving end of what James puts to them here. But maybe at some point in time they'd been on the giving end of this, and maybe we tonight find ourselves, depending on who we are and what we've gone through, in different positions with this scenario. So what's going on here? Well, from verse 15 to 17, we find this situation. I think we're far more familiar with than we realise. I hope and pray that this is a hypothetical, but I know that I've struggled with this. And this is what James says. He says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Like, favoritism is something we should avoid. This is the sort of situation, like favoritism, we think we don't fall into, but I think it's one we find ourselves in more often than we'd like to think. Whether it's hearing that somebody's going through a rough period of time, they're going through a rough patch, and our response is to say, I'll pray for you. Our response is to say, I'll be thinking of you. All the best as you work through this. But don't actually do anything to help them. This is the sort of thing that James is talking about. These sorts of things on their own are not wrong to say. And in the background of what James is saying is he's presenting it in a way as if the people he's writing to are in a position to provide help. He's writing it as if the people who he's writing to, us today included, we're reading this too, writing it as if we are in a position to give someone food or clothing or the shelter that they desperately need. Imagine a person coming up to you, or maybe you're walking past somebody in the shops or wherever it might be, and you see someone in need, you know somebody in need, and you do nothing to help them despite being in a position to help? Are you not with your actions saying that you don't care? Are you not with your actions suggesting that they should be the ones to sort their problems out for themselves? Now that might sound a tad extreme. And maybe we don't like to confront that cold reality, so we give the socially polite sayings. I'll pray for you. I'll be thinking of you. Be safe. Be warmed and filled without doing anything to help these people. Maybe somebody's living in an abusive relationship, which might be more common for us today to come across, and all we say is be safe. If we're in a position to help, and all we do is give these words, all we do is give these platitudes, those words don't really have much meaning at all, do they? It's like saying to someone, I know that you're in an abusive relationship. I know that you need some space from that situation. I know that I've got space in my house to provide for you. But all I'm going to say is stay safe. It's absolutely crazy that we would do that. It is unloving that we would do that. And if you're in need and you tell somebody who could help you that you're in need and you ask for food, for clothing, for shelter, protection, whatever it might be, and you got this response back, you would have every right to be frustrated. And James asks us, if you carry on like this, what does it profit? If you just give platitudes, if you just give those empty words, it's a long way off the mark of what we should be aiming for. But does this really matter in the long run, you might be asking? Is James just making a mountain out of a molehill? There'll always be people struggling. We can't help everybody. Surely this is their situation. Isn't it their responsibility? Don't we want people to take responsibility? Isn't it up to them to figure it out? That might seem cold, it might seem callous, but I think we do sometimes ask ourselves these sorts of questions. We struggle with it. We know that we should care. We know when we can help that we should provide help. That's why we say these things that sound good. Because we know that there's something we should be doing. But if it's only words, it does nothing for us and it does nothing for the people who we say it to. Except maybe to remind people who are struggling of the very struggle that they're trying to get out of. Now I know that homelessness and starvation might not seem like a big thing for us today. But we do still see it. These aren't situations which we are completely removed from. When we were down in Canberra, I'd often have to head into a part of Canberra called Civic in the middle of Canberra. There's a big shopping centre that I'd often meet people there for coffees. And in a lot of ways it was heartbreaking. The shops sort of crossed over the roads. There were sort of pedestrian crossings through the middle of the shops at different places. And I don't think I ever went there without seeing at least three homeless people. They're in Canberra. This is Australia's capital. A place where the housing market is high because there's considered to be a lot of affluency there. But even there are people who are homeless, and it's heartbreaking. This is a relevant issue. This is a live issue for us today, and we do need to be able to respond in a good way. Now, I've got to admit, sometimes I didn't respond in a good way. Sometimes I was so caught up in what I was doing that I just kept walking past. I fell into this trap that James is telling us to avoid. And we really should be avoiding it. James is telling us that especially if we say that we have faith, if we do not do those things that God tells us to do, the God who we say we have faith in tells us to do, then again in verse 17, faith without works is dead. We are not saved by what we do, but faith leads to works, and if it doesn't, then it is dead. We see this spelled out for us more as we keep going through this part of James in verses 18 to 20. James throws out another situation for us. And he says, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Again, faith without works is dead. And verses 18 to 19, they give us a lead-in to what's going on there. James makes it clear for us what's going on. And he says there, we read their words, that somebody will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works and I will show you my faith by my works. Let's start with the first part. Show me your faith without your works. I don't think we can do it, can we? I remember when I was in year 7, I heard for the first time of an amazing place called eBay. It was probably around before then. I was a bit off of the fairies most of the time, but I heard about it in year 7, and my teacher told me a story, which was a real story, been on the news, of an air guitar being sold on eBay. I really hope it wasn't purchased after an inspection. But to show someone your faith without your works, you might as well pull out an air guitar. How good is it? How good does this look? Do you like my air guitar? That's probably more air ukulele that size, but you get the picture. There's nothing there. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of mental capacity. Showing someone your faith without works is impossible. Whether we realize it or not, we all believe in something. We all have a faith in something. And that faith will shape not just what we think and believe internally, but that faith will shape the way that we go about our day-to-day lives and the way in which we act towards other people and the way in which we treat ourselves as well. So when he goes on and says, I will show you my faith by my works, it's by our works that we show what we believe. Maybe we believe that we are the highest authority in our lives. I mean, that's going to show itself in how we act, isn't it? Maybe we believe that we're worthless and that we have nothing to contribute anyway. That's going to show itself in how we act as well. I don't believe that second one of anyone, but some people do think that of themselves and it shows in what they do. What we believe always has an impact on what we do. Faith without works is no faith at all. But especially for the people that James is writing to, they say, just like many of us here tonight say, that we believe in God. We believe in a God who, as we've worked through James so far, just at the end of the second chapter here, and already God has said to us to look after the widows and the orphans. James has repeated Jesus' own teaching to love your neighbour as yourself. We're being taught here to actually do something for those that are naked and hungry. The God we say that we believe in Christians tells us to do this because if we have faith in him, we know this is what he did for us. And if our faith shapes how we act and we believe in a God who is generous to us in every single way, then will we not be generous to those around us in every single way? Will we not genuinely care for and love the people around us in every single way? What we believe is far more significant in everyday choices than we might imagine. So what do we believe? What do we have faith in? The demons believe and tremble. But they don't have a faith in God. They don't have a faith that God will provide. They don't have a faith that God is sovereign over everything and that everything we have should be given to him because he has given it to us to begin with. They are in opposition to God. Believing that there is a God is not enough. If we don't have faith in God, faith that God is the one and only true God, faith that he created everything, faith that his love for us is so deep that he would send his son to pay the price that we should have paid for ourselves, if we don't believe those things, but we still say, yeah, I believe there's a God, we're as bad off as these demons are. And they've been cast out of heaven. Faith will show itself in how we treat the people around us. Faith in a God who cares, in a God who saves, and a God who loves will be evident in how we act. Having faith in the one true God, the one true God who sent his son to die on that terrible cross in our place because we were spiritually naked, because we were spiritually hungry, because we were so dead spiritually that we couldn't even cry out to him for help, that he did it for us. That should have a huge impact on how we live our lives. If you're here tonight and you don't yet believe those things, then think about them. Consider the fact that when we were so poor, so hungry, so dead, that we could do nothing for ourselves, God did everything for us. Even when we were so cold and callous towards God that we acted as his enemies, he showed us the most amazing love. Does that not resonate right down to our core? We've seen so often this faith is not something we earn for ourselves. This faith is a gift from God. And we see all through the Bible and all through history since the Bible was finished that people have believed in God and believed in a saving God and had faith in God. That has impacted their actions, and James gives us a few of those tonight. He tells us about Abraham. Abraham, who was willing to sacrifice his son because of his faith in God. Now that might sound really dark and creepy, but they went up a mountain when Abraham was to sacrifice his son Isaac. At the bottom of the mountain, before they left the servants who were helping them carry the wood for the sacrificial fire, Abraham said to them, "We will return." He had faith that God would not abandon him because God is a good God. Even when he was holding the knife over his son, he was still trusting that God would provide, and God did provide. James also tells us of Rahab, who, if you were at Everton Park a few weeks ago, we read about her in James chapter 2, and if you haven't heard it, look up Kirk's sermon. It was a really good one on Rahab. She was a prostitute in the Old Testament who wasn't born into the Israelite nation. But she realized, having heard of God, that this was a God who was powerful. This was a God who was mighty. This was a God who was worth believing with everything she had and worth risking everything she had, to the point that she protected two spies and she was brought into God's promises. For Abraham, for Rahab, for any of us here today and anyone through history who has believed in God, it is truly profitable to have faith in him. And we see so often that that faith and the works that come out of it are inseparable. By the faith that God gives us, we read here tonight, justified, just like Abraham was. Justified is a legal term which says that we are declared right before God. Imagine standing in a courtroom, having a list of charges, everything you've ever done wrong in your life read out against you. As you hear those charges being read out, you know that you are guilty of every single one of them. There is no way out of any of them. You're standing there waiting for that final judgment to be delivered, for the guilty verdict to be put down. And the judge tells you that the fine has been paid and that you are right in the eyes of the court. You are declared free to go. This is a result of a faith in God. And this makes us realize that while we are called to faithfully represent God, to treat others the way that God has treated us, and we could never do that nearly as well as God has treated us, it makes us realize that God has done it all. When we have faith in Him, we realize that, yes, we are guilty. We are guilty before God. But we realize that His grace has covered over all of that guilt. Does that not result in gratitude? Do you not feel grateful for what God has done? When we think of this, it makes sense then that we would feed the hungry, that we would clothe the naked, that we would provide safety to the abused, that we would do all that we can to care for those around us, just as God has provided for us in far greater ways than we could ever imagine. This isn't about showing people how amazing we are. This is about showing people what God has done for us. Faith results in gratitude, where we give everything that we have to God who gave everything for us. We do not do these works, these acts of service to God, to pay back God for what He has given us. We never could do that. And we're never going to serve Him perfectly, which is why we continually need Jesus. Well, this is a big and challenging part of James tonight, of God's Word. Let's always be grateful for what He has done for us. And let's always look for those ways where we can show our thankfulness to God for the price that He paid for us.